This is Bigger Pockets Podcast, show 459.
In every conversation, there's a need. So the questions that are being asked are coming from a place that is deeper than the literal question, right? But there's a need that the person is trying to meet. And maybe they're trying to have you meet that need in conversation.
You're listening to Bigger Pockets Radio, simplifying real estate for investors large and small. If you're here looking to learn about real estate investing without all the hype, you're in the right place. Stay tuned and be sure to join the millions of others who have benefited from BiggerPockets.com, your home for real estate investing online.
What's up, everyone? It's Brandon Turner, host of the Bigger Pockets Podcast, here with my co-host, Mr. David, the active listener Green. What's up, man? How you been?
I'm really good. Got a big property under contract and adding to my team. We're doing well. We're hiring and Bigger Pockets is growing. The real estate market is solid. I think this is like the best time ever to be in real estate.
It is not a bad time to be in real estate. Yeah, we closed on a couple big mobile home parks recently and we're just about to launch fund number four. So three funds in the books and a bunch of launch number four. And,
you just put the fun in fund. You know that?
I put the fun in fund. That should be my nickname. Brandon the Fun and Fund Turner. I just gave myself one. You like that? Is that allowable?
Yeah, you do that all the time. There's something about
can you give yourself a nickname.
Only certain kinds of people do it.
I mean, it's why everyone calls me Brandon, the funnest guy in the entire world, way better than David Green Turner. That's what people call me. So I'm, you know,
there is an abnormally large amount of people who say that, and I sort of resent it, but it's okay. You earned it.
Thank you. Well, let's get into today's show. Today's show, we are interviewing an amazing author and just thought leader. I'm gonna probably butcher the name here. Ximena Vengoechea wrote an amazing book. It is called Listen Like You Mean It, and you're gonna learn all about the act of listening. Now, you might be thinking, what do I care about listening? I'm a good listener. I have ears. Well, what today is about is about how we can listen better in a conversation so that we can build rapport, so we can increase our negotiation skills, so we can make people like us more, which helps in all areas of business. This is just a really, really important topic that when I heard about this book, I was like, we got to dig in more because this is going to help you in your real estate business or whatever kind of business you're trying to grow right now. It's going to help you. So in the interview, we talk with Ximena about, for example, the three components that you need to bring into every conversation to make it a really good conversation. I thought that was just like solid gold. We talk about managing your energy and knowing like when to build your day, like when to do what activities throughout your day. We talk about that. We talk about humility, which is super vital if anybody wants to be successful at anything in life. We talk about tracking progress towards a long goal and a whole lot more. So pay attention for all of that and more coming up here in just a second. But first, let's get to today's quick tip. Here's my quick tip. One of the things I mentioned in today's show is how important it is when you're in a conversation with someone to, we talk about how asking questions can be so helpful. So here's what I want to challenge everyone with today. Next time you're having a conversation with someone and they are complaining about something in their life, whether it's a business thing, a relationship thing, whatever, make it a goal in that one conversation. It's just a game. We're just playing a little game here. Do not say anything that is not a question. Only ask questions in that conversation and see what kind of results the person that's complaining comes up with. So that's my quick tip for today is get in a conversation with someone where they're complaining and only ask questions. And you're going to see some remarkable changes in their life, I believe. So check it out. But more on that to come.
What's better than low money down? No money down. Now through Rent to Retirement, you can buy a brand new construction turnkey rental property for no money down. Wait, hold on. This can't be right. I need to double check with Zach, Rent to Retirement CEO.
Oh, hey, Rob.
Zach, how the heck are you selling turnkey rental properties for $0 down?
It's not that complicated, Rob. Rent to Retirement has new construction properties up to $20,000 below retail prices. We also have investor loans with rates as low as 3.99% and down payment options as low as 5% or sometimes even zero money down. You get all the cash flow, appreciation, and equity for as little as zero money down. That's an infinite return.
Oh, wait, let me get on this before we tell it to the whole Bigger Pockets audience.
Just head to renttoretirement.com. That's renttoretirement.com or text REI to 33777. That's REI to 33777 to learn more about how you can get started investing with no money down today.
Get your next new construction property at a steep discount or invest with no money down. Head to renttoretirement.com today. Spring is here, and you know what that means. Fresh flowers, fresh air, fresh starts. So why not take a fresh look at SimpliSafe Home Security? SimpliSafe protects my home during the busy spring season when I'm out leveling up my portfolio. But you know why I really love SimpliSafe? Because it's very easy to install. As a matter of fact, I set up my entire system, my personal home, which is a 4-bedroom, 3-bath, in less than 30 minutes. They've got a super simple app, as whenever we're on vacation, we have friends come by the house to water the plants, check on the house, whatever it is. We're able to turn off our alarm right before our friends get to the house and turn it on right after they leave instantly. SimpliSafe offers a wide variety of high-tech sensors that detect break-ins, fires, and floods. They've got indoor and outdoor cameras to keep watch day and night, 24/7 professional monitoring at less than $1 a day, and I challenge you to figure out what you can buy for less than $1 a day. And with the 60-day money-back guarantee, you can try SimpliSafe risk-free. SimpliSafe has given me and many of our listeners real peace of mind, and we want you to have it too. So, go get 20% off of your system today when you sign up for Fast Protect Monitoring at simplisafe.com/pockets. That's simplisafe.com/pockets. There's no safe like SimpliSafe. Passive income without the property headache? It's possible. There's a way to invest passively in real estate and get monthly income without any tenants, maintenance, or property management. The Wealthy have been doing this for years, and if you're an accredited or high net worth investor, you too can collect cash flow without the headaches that come from owning rentals. How? By investing in a private real estate fund with PPR Capital Management. PPR's co-founder, Dave Van Horn, wrote the book on real estate note investing for BP. But he's not just investing in notes. Dave and his team also have an extensive background in commercial real estate. And with PPR Capital Management, they're strategically investing in both notes and commercial real estate nationwide. With over $500 million in assets under management, PPR has provided individuals with a steady source of truly passive income since 2007 without ever missing a payment. Check them out at investwithppr.com. Again, if you're looking to get monthly passive income from an experienced team with a strong track record, go to investwithppr.com today.
And now, I think we're ready to jump into this interview with Ximena. Anything you want to add, David, before we jump in?
Nope. Let's bring her in.
All right. Here we go. All right, Ximena, welcome to the Bigger Pockets podcast. Awesome to have you here.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. So let's jump in a little bit of your background. Today, we're going to talk a lot about listening and conversations and networking and all that good stuff. But where did you, I guess, get this fascination or interest? I mean, enough to write a book on the topic, but where did that come from? What's your background?
Sure. So I think the fascination comes from a sort of larger fascination with people, who they are and what makes them tick. And that's something that I've been exploring in my day job as a user researcher for quite some time. So for those who aren't familiar, user research is what I would call one of the more people-centric roles in the technology industry, where your job is literally to understand users, people, the people behind, you know, the numbers, and get a sense of how they use products, how they might use your product, what their needs are, their perceptions, their motivations. And so it's a great role for someone who's interested in psychology and anthropology and that kind of thing. My background's in comparative literature. So I have a bunch of degrees that don't really make a ton of sense for the tech world, but that was sort of my entry, is what can I learn about people in order to help build better products? And the sort of core skill of being a researcher is listening. So that's something that I've been dedicated to for some time now.
Okay, very cool. So why, of all the books you could write and the topics you could cover, like, why did that end up being the thing that you're like, this is what I'm going to focus the next few? I mean, David and I have both written books. It's a marathon. It's a tremendous amount of work and effort and time. So why listening?
Yeah, listening felt super important to me, in that I had learned these skills through my job of how to ask good questions, how to make space for others to say what they need to say, how to take conversations deeper. And while I was applying that in this traditional UX lab setting, it also just became increasingly clear to me that there was so much applicability outside of just the lab. And I started to feel, I remember at a certain point, almost like I had the upper hand, you know, like in a meeting, I could kind of read the room a little bit better. I had a better sense for how to collaborate with people, or as a manager, I was more in tune with who might work better together. And the same, you know, started happening in other areas of my life. And the thing that has always compelled me to write and to take on a project that you're going to be focusing on for many, many years is there something in here that's useful for other people? Is there something here that I can share some kind of knowledge that I can share that will be useful. And it felt like listening could be very useful in all of these aspects of our lives. And it's sort of this quiet, sort of hidden talent. I think we tend to spend a lot more time thinking about how we speak, how we show up in conversation. Can we persuade, negotiate, influence, pitch? All of those things are great. But there's also this other side, which is, can we listen and can we understand? And can we take that understanding and form a real connection with someone? And I think right now, in this moment, it feels like that connection, that sort of human to human connection, is harder and harder to come by for so many reasons, culturally, politically, blame social media. Like, what, you can pick at so many reasons that that's the case. But that to me gave this idea so much more urgency and was really the driving force for continuing to work on it and get it out into the world.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I do feel like, especially, yeah, I don't know if it's just in the last year or so since this COVID mess came down, but like my need to establish relationships with people has gotten a lot, or my, I shouldn't say need, my ability to establish relationships has gotten a lot harder, probably just because we're not in person as much with people anymore. And so everything becomes a Zoom call or a phone conversation. And I don't pick up on as many of the, maybe it's like social cues that you maybe get in real life, like you're sitting at a coffee shop with somebody. And so again, that's why when I heard about this book, I was fascinated by the topic. And I'm like, this is definitely something that if I can get better at listening, at conversations, at interacting, it's going to benefit all areas of my life, especially my real estate. I mean, I run a big real estate business and buy a lot of properties, but so much of that is based upon my ability to build that rapport. So I kind of, I'm not really first question because I've already thrown a few at you, but first question of the topic here, what do people get wrong when it comes to listening? What do you find is a common like screw up, mistake, problem that a lot of people just have and maybe they don't even know they have?
Yeah, I think most people most of the time aren't actually listening. We think we are. That's the sort of number one thing is we think we're listening and we're there, you know, we're there enough to nod and smile or, you know, respond in some way. So you're not just ignoring the other person per se, but we're not really taking in what the other person is saying. Often we're winding up to respond. So somebody says something and we have an idea that we want to share or a follow-up. And that's what we start thinking about instead of hearing the other person out. Or we're distracted by our devices. I mean, who hasn't had a day or a moment where that's been the case? You know, so there are lots of things that actually distract us from being present and actually hearing the other person. And I call that surface listening mode. It's sort of like you're staying at the surface, you're catching bits and pieces, but you're not catching meaning or emotion, which is where that human connection tends to occur.
My wife and I were in the kitchen yesterday and she's telling me something. I can't remember what it was. This proves the point even more so. And she's telling me something important. And as she's talking, I grabbed my phone and I picked it up and I looked at it because something buzzed. And then I opened it and I went to my like Instagram DMs because that's what the thing was. And I started scrolling through the DMs and she just stops talking. And she looks at me and she goes, what are you doing? Like I'm talking to you. I'm like, I was listening and now I can't, I have no idea what she was talking about. So, I know I'm so guilty of this. And the whole idea of trying to think of, I know what I want to say next to this thing. So let me just get them to stop talking so I can start talking next. I know I'm very guilty of that as well. David?
What I was thinking as you were talking, Hemina, was, is it when the speaker isn't meeting my expectations of an appropriate conversation? So what would have triggered Brandon to get on his phone? Was it Heather started talking about something that he's not interested in? Was it a thought went through his head that he subconsciously prioritized over Heather? He thought it was really important. Was there a part of him where she gave him a nonverbal cue that, hey, this part isn't important, I'm just talking to myself, but you may have to jump back in? There's something like that programs when we focus on what someone's saying and when we don't. And I'm curious if you can maybe shine a light onto why my attention will sometimes waver.
I think you're right in that all of those scenarios you mentioned could have been triggers for, you know, kind of starting to shut down in a conversation inadvertently. And the thing is, there are more of those out there than we would like to admit. And I think what really helps us is the intentionality that you bring into a conversation. of saying, hey, I'm going to be here and I'm going to be present with this person, because there's always going to be those, not even just those distractions, but I mean, there's a whole other set of things that can set you off, which are your emotions. Like something was said and it caused an emotional reaction in you. And it doesn't matter whether or not the other person meant it. You're now in this totally different state of mind. So there's always going to be something that can pull you out of this deeper listening mode. And I think what is most helpful is setting that intention up front of, I'm going to go deeper. I'm going to be present. I'm going to be aware of when my thoughts are starting to run the show and just notice that. You know, it's sort of taking a meditative approach of, oh, here's a thought. I want to chime in with this idea. Okay, I'm just going to observe that and let it go and come back to the present. Or, oh, I want to grab my phone. I don't know why I wanted to grab it, but let's just put that down and come back. Because there are so many things that can compete for that deep conversation.
How much of that do you think is a byproduct of the digital age we live in, where we sort of all have ADHD in a sense? We're just used to constant stimulus, and having to focus on one person at one time is just a muscle that we haven't worked out in a while.
I think that social media, the internet, all of those things have probably exacerbated that challenge of, you know, staying present and made the issue worse. But I don't know that I think it's the source or the cause of it. I think we all have this kind of human instinct to want to be seen or heard. And that comes out in different ways in conversation. And sometimes part of how that comes out is wanting to contribute. And that's why we wind up ahead of time, or, you know, maybe tuning out because a topic isn't interesting to us. That's not a social media thing. That's an us thing, right? Of like, we're just not drawn to that. And we, you know, devote our attention elsewhere. But I do think that the world we live in now has certainly made it so much easier to give in to those, let's say, human weaknesses that we bring into conversation.
If I want to get better at listening in conversation with talking to people, what are some of the places to start?
Yeah. So the first thing I would say is just bringing that into intentionality we talked about earlier, and specifically thinking about three qualities that you can bring into conversation, which is humility, curiosity, and empathy. So humility is what is going to help you kind of calm that monologue that might be in your brain of, I know the right answer, or I know, you know, what's going to happen next, or you're wrong, right? And those reactions often stop us from listening because we're sort of on our pedestal and we're ready to chime in with the quote unquote right answer. So bringing in humility, bringing in curiosity also. So we were talking about, you know, is the topic something that just made you tune out in conversation? Maybe, but there's always something else that you can get curious about. So there are definitely topics, and I think this is totally fair and normal for everyone to have certain subjects that you're just not as interested in. That's fine. But if somebody you care about is bringing up that conversation topic, can you get curious about that? Well, why do they care so much about this topic? Is there something that I can learn about their interest in it or their motivation for bringing this up? Something that I can get curious about. And then the third is empathy. And that's really trying to put yourself in the other person's shoes and understand their experience. It doesn't mean you need to have that experience or share that exact experience, but you're tapping into that emotional side of things and what they're experiencing. And those three qualities, if you can bring them into a conversation, are going to help you go much deeper than you ordinarily would.
That's really good. Yeah, I was just thinking about how those three things are what usually like caused me to do what I did to my wife, right? Like she was probably explaining something because I do this all the time. I'm a terrible listener, but like, yeah, I'll immediately want to solve her problem because I can solve every problem. So I'm the husband. I got this. So that's my lack of humility and, you know, the empathy, of course. Like I tend not to think like, does she want me? I once said somebody today, do you want me to fix this or do you want me to feel this? Right. So again, it goes back to, I just want to fix this thing. I want to be able to solve this problem. And as a result, it ends up just creating conflict in my relationship there, where usually like my wife's not afraid to now just tell me, be like, just stop trying to fix my problem, just listen to me. And I'm like, oh, okay. And then like it takes that, but it really takes that intentionality. It takes going like, I'm going to be here. I'm going to focus in on this thing. I'm going to, you know, not just shove my ego in the way and be able to solve this thing. Is that what you call the listening mindset? I know that there's a chapter in the book called the listening mindset. Is that what that is?
Yeah, that's exactly right. It's when you bring those three things in and combine them, that's your listening mindset. And really the sort of foundation for that too is being mindful and being aware of what you're bringing into conversation.
You know, one of the ways I see this pop up in our world as real estate agents or loan officers is somebody will make a statement, maybe they're addressing a concern they have, and my staff will answer the specific question they asked, okay? And then the person will ask another question, or they'll express another fear, and then they'll just answer that. And we'll get into this game of what I call whack-a-mole, where they just keep bringing up new objections, and we just keep answering them and hitting these bowls, and it never actually goes away. And what I've found is that usually the person asking questions isn't actually asking for that specific problem to get fixed. They're actually, in a sense, what it feels like, at least to me, is they're showing you what's in their heart, and they're saying, I'm really scared and I don't know how to articulate this on my own. And what we have to do is actually ask them questions. We have to get behind why these moles keep popping up, and it'll just frequently come up where one of my staff members will be frustrated and they'll say, well, we keep coming back to the same problem. And I'll say, well, have you actually addressed the concern, the nature of the problem? Or are you just answering their questions as if they can fix this themselves? Do you have any advice for those scenarios themselves? Because I know our listeners are going to see this when they find a seller who wants to sell a house, but it belonged to their grandmother, and they just keep on throwing another wrench in what looks like a good negotiation, and you can't quite get to the root of where it's at, or other scenarios like that.
One thing we don't realize necessarily, and what you're pointing to here, is that in every conversation, there's a need. So the questions that are being asked are coming from a place that is deeper than the literal question, right? But there's a need that the person is trying to meet. And maybe they're trying to have you meet that need in conversation. And so they're asking those questions as a way of sort of getting closer to some sort of resolution, to feeling better, to feeling more secure, to feeling less intimidated, whatever that may be. And when you stay at this, you take the surface, you stay at the literal level of, oh, they asked me X, I'm going to answer Y. You miss the need underneath. And so I think this is where there's two things that I would suggest. One is figuring out what your listening mode, your default listening mode is. So this is how you tend to show up in conversation. So Brandon was saying earlier, he tends to show up as a problem solver. He hears everything through the lens of a problem to be solved. That is one of the default listening modes. There are other listening modes. There are people who are natural mediators. They want everybody's voice to be heard. They want to consider things from all angles. So they hear everything through that lens. So the first thing I would say is figuring out what is your listening mode, because you're going to bring that into every conversation and you're going to hear the other person's questions and interpret them through that mode. So figuring out what yours is and then assessing whether that's actually what's called for. So is the problem-solving mode right here, or is, you know, what I would call like a nurse mode, where you're more comforting and supporting in a different way? Is that the response that's called for? And then the other thing I would say, in addition to figuring out what is that mode and is that mode going to help meet that need in the moment, is figuring out how to ask better questions. And so, David, you started talking about this of like, you know, they're asking you questions, but maybe we need to be asking them questions. And I think that's totally right. And there's a few kinds of questions that I think can be helpful. And the first is that most of the questions we ask are often somewhat disconnecting, in the sense that we don't realize it, but we're leading somebody towards a certain response. So we might ask a close-ended question, a question they can answer in a yes or no. But they tend to kind of hit a certain dead end. And we really want to open it up and ask more open-ended questions. So trying to stay away from questions that start with do, is, or are, like, Are you ready to do X, Y, Z? Do you like this? Right? It's not going to take you so very far. But if you ask, oh, hey, how do you feel about that? Or what do you make of this? Much more open-ended.
Yeah, that's really good.
The other thing I think can be helpful there is asking what I call encouraging questions. So once you've kind of sort of, you've opened it up and the person has started to let you in, you want to keep taking it deeper generally. And there are questions that are really small. They don't actually sound like questions, but they can be very powerful for helping to continue to open things up so that you get to the root of why do they keep, you know, responding in XYZ way. And that can sound like, say more about that, or tell me more about that, or what else? They're small. They don't sound flashy by any means, but you're just giving the other person space to say a little bit more. And my favorite version of this is actually really small, and it's just to say, because. So if the person says, I'm worried about such and such a thing, then I would say, because ... I'm just giving them space to finish that thought instead of saying, well, you don't have to worry about that because, you know, we've got it solved, right? I actually want to know why they're worried about it, because maybe my solution isn't going to address their concern. So those are some of the things that I would suggest to kind of get a little bit deeper, get to that need, and then start to respond in a way that that person will really be able to hear you.
Yeah, that's really good. I know with my daughter, I'm trying to do more of that because it's easy for me to be like, hey, did you have a good day today? Right. And then yes. Or did you have fun at that activity? Yes. Or no. And so she's 4 years old. So I'm trying to shift how I talk to her in terms of like, what was your favorite part about the pony ride? Or how did you feel when you're up on that horse? Like things like that, just get conversation. And she still answers, you know, I don't know all the time. I don't know. But it gets her mind working a little bit more. And I find the same is true when I'm doing like real estate transactions in business. Like when I'm talking to a motivated seller, somebody who's owns a house and they're not sure they want to sell it. I'm talking to them just by me coming in there and telling them what's up. It tends to shut down the conversation so much faster than if I just ask them. So tell me more about that. I like that. I say that a lot. Tell me more about that is a phrase that I've been trying to use more because it gets them opening up, gets them talking. And you know, though, this goes back to what's his name? Dale Carnegie. Is that the guy who wrote
How to Win Friends and Influence People?
Right. So like people love to talk. And so get them talking. They're going to naturally like you more. I want to dig a little bit more on one of those three things, you know, the empathy you talked about. And then you talked about, what was the first one? Empathy was the last one. The first one was, I wrote it down here, humility. And the middle one, curiosity, right? What can you teach about curiosity? And the reason I ask is because when I think of somebody who's a really good conversationalist, like I think of like Joe Rogan, one of the best conversationalists I know. He's got, you know, the biggest podcast in the world. But the reason why he's so good, I think, is because he's so darn curious. Like he could be interviewing somebody about something he could care less about. And it's an engaging conversation because he's just curious about it. So how do we develop that, or how do we improve that in our lives, our curiosity?
It's a great question. I think, curiosity comes to us very naturally, especially when we're younger. And then we sort of learn what we're supposed to pay attention to and what we're not, and kind of narrow in from there. And certainly adulthood asks you to specialize. And so you become very curious about one or two things and then sort of shut everything else out. But I think part of becoming, you know, a more curious person is actually removing the idea that you might be an expert, especially if it's a topic that you know a lot about. It can be really easy to say, I'm good. I've got this, you know. And that's also when we wind up winding our own responses up of, oh, here's what I have to say about this. So I think trying to kind of take on that student perspective as opposed to an expert's perspective, or even just saying, I'm an expert, but there's always more, right? Like no expert is ever done learning. There's always more. And so taking that perspective, I think, can be helpful. I think asking the question to yourself of what else can I learn here can also be a helpful reminder to tune into, you know, what's happening. And the other thing I would say is, I think that sometimes there's this idea that when we meet people, we have to be interesting in order for them to, you know, engage with us in a certain way or, you know, make friends or whatever it may be. But actually what research shows is that curiosity, people who demonstrate that they are interested in you, that's what draws people in. So it's not how good is the story you're telling, it's how curious are you about the other person? Because as you mentioned earlier, like people love to talk about themselves. People have things that they want to share. If you can make someone feel like you're interested in them genuinely, not putting on a show, but genuinely, because you're asking good questions, they are going to remember you.
Yeah.
And that's really powerful.
Yeah, I hear that a lot in terms of like in the real estate space. You know, we often say that people want or people like to sell to people they like. And so if somebody's going to, they have like five different options in front of them, like there's different people talking about buying their property or there are multiple options on a property. If they like one person more than the others, it gives a huge benefit to that person. And so just by being that, I guess, that curious and interested and asking about their reasons on what they're doing. Now, it's not always possible if you're buying like through a real estate agent, you don't always get to actually talk to the seller. But any way that you can try to build that rapport more, it helps. Now, one thing I struggle as an introvert, I'm very introverted. People are always surprised by that because I got a podcast, but that's why I have a podcast, because I don't have to talk to a lot of people at one time. I just get to record it and I could edit this later. So for those people who are introverted like me, what do you have for tips or encouragement or maybe stuff you've researched in terms of how that I can get better at building these relationships and getting people to like me when it's just not natural? I just don't necessarily love doing it.
Yeah, I think part of it is practice and just kind of putting yourself out there bit by bit and trying it out. I think the other part of it is building that self-awareness muscle about yourself of what are the conditions that you need in order to have a good, deep conversation, which it sounds like you've got some of that already, right? Like you already know that maybe a big crowd is not going to help you have a deep and fulfilling conversation. Great starting point, right? Because then you can architect those conversations a little bit differently. But it also is, you know, are you a morning person or a night owl? Are you someone who gets depleted after one deep conversation, or can you do, you know, three in a row? How much does context switching affect your ability to be present and empathetic in a conversation? So there's all these elements that affect how we show up in a conversation. And I think being in tune with that can really help you set yourself up for success or say, hey, this actually isn't a great time. I really value you and I want to have a good conversation here. Can we punt or do this after lunch or, you know, whatever might suit you a little bit better?
I noticed that your definition of curiosity actually involved humility. You have to assume you don't know everything and there's still something to learn. It seems like this theme of humility is coming up a lot and that maybe when we're not listening, it's actually involved with ego. Would you mind sharing how you define humility? I think a lot of people assume humility is thinking low of themselves and putting themselves down. It doesn't sound though that that's what you're advocating.
Yeah, I think humility is really about being open to learning something from the other person. You know, in user research, your job is to get to know another person and learn from them in order to build a better product. And so I would always start my interviews by saying, I'm here to learn from you. And I'm going to be like neutral Switzerland. So anything you say, I'm not going to get offended by it. I'm not going to take it personally. And I would even reassure them and say, hey, I didn't design this thing. I didn't build this thing. So you really can't hurt my feelings. And I think it's about bringing those same qualities into a conversation of, hey, I'm here to learn from you. And I'm not expecting to be right in any way. And creating that sort of open space for someone to be themselves. And it's not that you are disappearing from the conversation by doing that. It's not that, you know, because if you do that, it becomes a monologue, not a dialogue. It's not that you're completely repressing who you are in any way. You're just giving the other person space to be themselves and being willing to learn from that experience rather than judge that experience, for instance, if it's different from yours.
Yeah, I've noticed that's another thing that you go back to is there's actually a skill that the listener develops to pull out from the person they're listening to more information. It's not as simple as just shut up and listen to them talk. There's actually statements you make that would allow that person to believe that they're not under a threat if they say something that could be perceived wrong, that you're actively saying, well, I didn't design this product, so if you don't like it, it's no skin off my back. I just want to know how you experience it. That allows that person to give you their honest feedback, as opposed to if they don't know how you're going to take it, a lot of their mental energy is geared towards how they articulate their thoughts without offending you, which means you're not getting the real raw version of theirs. And I think what you're getting at here is this is so important because this skill is lacking in the world, and those that can figure it out sort of have a superpower and advantage over everyone else. Am I close there?
Yeah, I think so. I think, and I think you notice it when somebody brings that into conversation because it's not super common. You notice, and I don't know if you've ever had a conversation where you've felt like, wow, you instantly got to know someone, or you were able to share a part of yourself that maybe you don't tend to bring up until, like, you know, friend hangout number 5 or whatever your sort of progression into some sort of intimacy is. Like, you notice when somebody's really present, really there, really interested in you, and when they're not trying to change your minds. And I think that has just such a different tenor, those conversations, and can lead to just much deeper relationships when you experience that.
Yeah, I feel like all of us can, like, think of, like, if I said right now, think of that one friend that you have that, like, when you're talking with them, they're just all in on what you have to say. Like, in my mind, like, there's a woman here on Maui named Caroline. David, you know Caroline, right? Like, whenever I see her anywhere and talk to her, she's just like, all she cares about in that moment is whatever I'm saying. And she's, like, fascinated by it. Now, I could be explaining the most boring story about my daughter or whatever, and she's just super fascinated by the topic and, like, in it. And it just makes me feel so good to talk to her because she's that way. And it is. It's like a superpower. And so when you get known as somebody who is a just great listener, somebody who just is all in on it. Like, I've never thought once, like, oh, Caroline just wants, you know, wants my business, or she wants me to work with, like, I don't know what she wants. There's not, like, there's zero agenda there. She just literally is a person who is just really good at talking. And my wife's good friends with her too. And, like, my wife has said the exact same thing. So, Caroline, shout out to you for being awesome. But yeah, I want to develop that superpower in myself. And I think, like, the way you've laid that out, you know, having the curiosity, having the empathy, and working toward being intentional is really what the key of this is just being intentional. I'm going to be a better listener, and I'm going to bring that intentionality into every conversation. Is that a good way to kind of sum that up?
Yeah. And I would also say, you know, just to kind of set the bar at an approachable level, right? You don't have to get it right every time. And, mm-hmm. you know, it is a muscle that isn't flexed all the time. And so it's going to feel awkward in the beginning. But there's lots of little things that you can do along the way to strengthen that muscle. Even little things like, as you're, you know, trying to listen with empathy and intention, reflecting back what you've heard and saying, hey, it sounds like such and such, or my understanding is ABC about what you've just said. Those are ways of gut checking that you've really picked up what the person is putting down. And they also have the added effect of giving the other person a chance to say, yes, that's exactly it. Thank you for hearing me. Or actually, you've got it wrong. And let me, you know, kind of correct you and put you in the right direction again. And so even when, as we're kind of feeling things out and trying things for the first time, there's ways to make progress, and there's ways for that space to instantly open up. And, you know, we don't have to be perfect along the way. We can ask for that gut check, and it still is going to be really productive.
I really like that practical tip. That is something that people can take from the conversation and just say, boom, in my next conversation, that's what I'm going to apply. Do you have any others of maybe the big stuff that you see, that, like, kind of the low-hanging fruit that we can all start addressing in certain specific scenarios?
One thing to think about too, particularly if you're having a difficult conversation, like something that you know there's some sort of emotional attachment to it, or, you know, it might be the topic that's difficult, or it just might be you've sensed, or the person has told you they don't, you know, want to go there, or there's some sort of, you know, I'm thinking particularly like, oh, I don't want to sell my house because I've got my grandfather is, you know, somehow in the picture. The thing I would say about difficult conversations is to really set the stage for what's going to happen, because those conversations are uncomfortable. And we may know that we have no intention of hurting the other person or making them uncomfortable. But I think sometimes just even saying, hey, I want to talk to you about X, and I know it might get a little uncomfortable, but please know that when I ask you a question about this topic, or when I follow up about something, it's not my intention to push you away or to judge in any way or to change your mind. I'm really trying to understand, and it might sting a little bit, but that's where it's coming from. I think that can help when you're taking on the sort of knotty topics, because you're explicitly saying, hey, this might be uncomfortable, and I don't want to make it uncomfortable, but that's just kind of the reality of talking about this thing. But here's where I'm coming from, to create a little bit more trust in what could be a pretty vulnerable conversation.
Yeah, I like that you kind of mentioned, it's almost like by labeling it, right? I know you mentioned that in the book. It's one of the parts I read in there about like naming, like psychologists will name things or label it so you can like withdraw from a little bit, right? So if like you're just feeling horrible, if you were like, oh, that's anxiety, you label it. That's a thing you can look at from a step back position. That's kind of what I see you're doing here, is you're saying, look, I'm going to label this thing as an uncomfortable conversation. Now that conversation is a thing. Now we can have a rational conversation about this thing, but that thing is not me. That thing is not like my feelings. Those are separate things. Is that how you look at that?
Yeah, I think in general, being more explicit than we think is necessary tends to be a pretty good rule of thumb. You know, just going back to thinking about the idea that there are these hidden needs in conversation, they're often hidden because we think we're being explicit about what we need. You know, we think that we're just putting it all out there, and we're really not. Like, we think we're easy to read, and we're not. And this happens all the time. And so I think being explicit in, you know, saying, here's what I've heard, did I get it right? Being explicit in asking, how would you like me to respond if you're not sure? You know, asking things like, would you like me to listen or would you like me to respond? Mm-hmm. Or, you know, I have some ideas that I think would be helpful. I'm not sure if that's what you're looking for. Would it be welcome to share some of those ideas? So you're kind of feeling it out along the way, and then you're just externalizing your instinct for the other person to say, yes, like, advice would be great right now. And then you can fully go into problem solver mode, or no, that's actually not right, you know. And sometimes people don't know what they need. Often people don't know what they need. And that's when asking those kinds of questions can help, where you say, hey, is it that you'd like, you know, X or Y? Like, you can give them an either or. Are you looking for A or B? Give them something to respond to. And then that is what helps them fully step into conversation.
It sounds like what you're saying, the vision I see in my mind as you're talking, is that oftentimes we just want to send advice their way. And maybe that's what they wanted, and in those cases, it's fine. At other times, that's not what they wanted, and then they pull back. And what you're describing is to almost ask permission to build the pathway before you send the advice down it. Are you looking for advice in this scenario is a way of like, can I build a road that I can then put my advice on before you just throw the advice in, and then they feel like you didn't listen to anything I said, or it doesn't matter what I'm saying. And that is probably the number one mistake that I think I myself make. And Brandon and I are probably of the same cut, where we assume the only reason you're talking to us is you want us to solve your problem. That's why you're here. And this is embarrassing to admit in front of everybody. I think the number one mistake I make in almost every relationship I have is I never think to say, did you just want me to understand what you're going through? And it's the easiest thing that solves so many problems. And still, I just fumble that ball every single time. And I have to continually remind myself what you're describing is when I say, do you want me to understand? Or that must be really hard. And then you see their face just like, oh, yes, they get the relief they were looking for, is me putting out that pathway and saying, and maybe I didn't even need to send advice, just the pathway, the connection, let all their stuff come to me, and they got rid of it. And I don't know why that is so hard. It's like the easiest solution to so many problems, and yet I will just screw it up so often. It's because I have too much ego, isn't it? I'm not humble enough.
I think it's a very natural response. You know, we don't generally have that much practice just witnessing someone in conversation. We just don't, right? We assume that there's something else that's happening, and we think, and we have this desire to help or nurture or care for. And sometimes all the other person needs is literally just the space that you give them to express themselves. And also it's really hard, right? For someone to come out and say, hey, you know what I really need from you right now is I need your encouragement or I need your validation. You know, I just need you to say like, yes, you're right. We often don't start conversations like that, but sometimes that is what we need. And so
yes,
it is kind of just practicing giving them that space. And I think, you know, a big part of this too is just tempering any instinct to speak even. Like we tend to think of silence in conversation as a thing to be avoided at all costs because we take it as a sign of disinterest or boredom, or we've said something stupid, you know, and so we're like, oh, if there's a beaten conversation, let's quickly fill it. I'll chime in with advice, or I'll change the topic. I'll start rambling about myself. I'll end the conversation. But sometimes that silence just means the other person is working their way up to saying more or processing an idea. And so I think some of it is just getting a little bit comfortable with being uncomfortable in conversation and sitting in that silence or tempering our own instincts and just giving that person space and asking, creating that path to see where it will go.
Yeah, that's such good advice to keep in mind. It sounds like what you're telling me, if I'm hearing you right, is that many times the person that I'm supposedly listening to is actually feeling me out subconsciously to see, is this a safe path that I can send stuff to? And that the superpower of being able to give people that assured feeling that, yes, this is safe, will get them to reveal everything. And then as a byproduct of that, they're going to like you. They're going to trust you. They're going to feel close to you, which is what we were trying to accomplish the whole time that we just wouldn't stop talking about ourselves.
Yeah. And it's not just, you know, how they feel. We feel great too, as the listener, right? Because we've had this kind of breakthrough where we now really understand the other person on a different level. And it creates this sort of cycle of goodwill, right? If you feel like you can be safe with me and be yourself, then I feel like I get to know you. I can trust you, right? It kind of feeds on itself in a really lovely way.
You know, we do these mastermind groups out here in Maui. I've done a few of them now where we bring out like a bunch of investors and we just have a couple of days to just kind of help each other work their problems. And one of the most impactful moments of those events that we have out there, we do this segment where we take everyone, and this I'll give a shout out to my partner in that, Tarl Yarber, who helps me run the masterminds. He started this thing where we get into these groups of like 5 to 6 people in a group. And then each person gets 10 or 15 minutes to talk about their issue for a little bit. And then everyone else in the group is offering commentary on it. But here's the key to what we do is the people listening are not allowed to offer any advice whatsoever. Every single thing has to be a question, no matter what. There's zero advice given. And the irony of that is those are the most impactful moments of, I feel like, that mastermind. Even though nobody gave any advice at all. And you can't cheat with like, have you ever thought of, you know, doing X, Y, Z, which would just be a, you know, cheating. Like it's all questions, just question after question after question after question. And when I think of my performance coach, I have a performance coach named Jason Dries, and Jason, so shout out to Jason, and his main job is to ask me questions. So I guess I'm just pointing those two things out just to showcase what you're saying here is so true, that the people in our lives don't need us to solve their problems as much as they do. Just asking those little questions will help them because they'll figure out the answer in their own head most of the time.
We know, and you all know, why it's super important that good tenant screening is absolutely critical to your management process. Luckily, Rent Ready, the comprehensive property management software, has a new feature that makes tenant screening a breeze. In addition to TransUnion certified tenant screening, Rent Ready now offers proof of income verification. Rent Ready's automatic tenant proof of income verification ensures an in-depth check of each applicant's financial stability. With Plaid certified tenant income and assets reports, you can see a potential tenant's income summary and total earnings by month. All tenant screening and verification is paid by the tenant and done through the desktop and mobile app. It's time to say goodbye to gut check tenant screening and feel confident renting out your property with Rent Ready. And as a matter of fact, all Bigger Pockets pros have Rent Ready included in your pro membership. If you're not a pro, Rent Ready is offering you 50% off of their annual plan. New customers visit rentready.com and use code BP2024. That's RENTREDI.com using code BP2024. That's BP, like Bigger Pockets, in the year 2024 to save 50% off of 1 year of Rent Ready. You're trying to close on your next rental, so why is your insurance company dragging its feet? With long lead times and never-ending paper forms, it's no wonder it takes forever to finally get a policy. Modern investors deserve better. They deserve Steadily.com. At Steadily.com, you'll get fast, affordable landlord insurance available online 24/7 in just a few clicks. You can even get next-day coverage, which takes just minutes, by the way, to obtain. And you can do it all from your phone. Steadily was founded by landlords who created insurance products tailored to the unique needs of this industry. It's their sole focus, and that's why landlords nationwide consistently rate them 4.8 out of 5 stars. So whether you've got a single family, short-term, or multifamily portfolio, Steadily.com can secure the best coverage at the best price to protect your properties. Discover how Steadily can save you both time and money on your rental property insurance. Visit Steadily.com for a commitment-free quote tailored to your needs today. The dream of owning a vacation home can be daunting. From finding the best guests, to the maintenance, to organizing the cleaners after every guest day, with Vacasa, they make that dream into a reality. As a full-service vacation home management company with vacation homes in key destinations across the U.S., they know a thing about how to make owning a vacation home easy and profitable. On top of proactive property maintenance visits by professional local teams, a hospitality-driven booking platform, and around-the-clock support, Vacasa earns homeowners an average of 20% more revenue from their vacation homes. Vacasa is always thinking of ways to simplify the vacation home owning experience by putting your home to work for you. If you're looking to make more from your vacation home, work with the reliable property manager, and finally have peace of mind, partner with Vacasa at vacasa.com/biggerpockets. That's vacasa.com/biggerpockets.
So I do want to move, though, shifting the perspective from the person who's supposed to be listening to what about when we're in a conversation with someone and they are not listening? You can just tell, like I'm sure all of us have been in that situation. You just tell somebody's not super actively listening, or they're not doing a good job. They're focused on something else. You know, they glance down on their phone once in a while. They're whatever. How can you get them to listen better without being like, you know, slapping them upside the head, be like, moron, pay attention to me. Like any tips there, anything you researched on there?
Yeah. So I think of there being a couple of groups when we think of listening. And one is this group of energizers. They make you feel great for all the reasons we talked about because they're deeply listening. And then there's this group that I call the takers. And they're people who take more from you in conversation than they give back. And so they're not great listeners. They maybe spend more of their time talking about themselves than checking in on you. And I think we've all been on the receiving end of that, and it doesn't feel great. So the advice that I give is, it sort of depends on whether the person in this group is someone that you need in your life that is important for your work or some other area or not. I think if it's, you know, you've just realized, hey, this friend that you've had just really isn't supportive and isn't listening in that way, and you've sort of tried to, you know, even out the conversation, I do think there are certain relationships where it's okay to start to distance yourself and just reorient that energy into the relationships that really are nourishing. It's so much easier to work on changing yourself than it is to change other people. So the idea of, you know, saying, hey, I want this person to be a better listener, you know, it's hard, right? That work has to kind of come from within. So I think distancing, when it's an option, worth considering. Just also worth considering, like, overall, what is that balance of takers and energizers in your life, and making sure that you feel good about that. And then the other thing I would say is, you know, sometimes we can't just say, okay, I'm not going to deal with this person anymore. And I think in that case, just thinking about, you know, how to gracefully exit a conversation or end a conversation, because again, changing people when they don't, you know, aren't ready to be changed or aren't, you know, capable at that moment of doing that can be tricky. So thinking more about, you know, when do you need to protect your time and your energy, and then finding ways to gracefully exit that conversation. And I think there's, you know, there's simple ways of saying, hey, it's been great catching up. I've got to run. You don't need to say why you're exiting the conversation, can be one technique. I think if you know that it's a sort of repeat offender, maybe someone who you, for professional reasons, meet with regularly, I like to design meetings with some sort of end or, you know, clear end to them. And that can either mean, you know, taking lunch at a busy restaurant where you know tables have to turn over instead of going to the cafe where you can linger for hours. Mm-hmm. That way you don't have to be the one to say, hey, like, you know, I gotta go, right? It's like there are clear cues built into your environment. So I would say a combination of, you know, the things that you can say to just gracefully end that conversation, and then also architecting things and, you know, telling people up front of, hey, I've only got 20 minutes to chat, but I'm all ears for those 20 minutes, you know, kind of setting those expectations along the way.
Yeah, because sometimes, especially when it comes to like family or close friends, you just like, you can't just be like, hey, I'm never going to talk to you again, you know, sister-in-law or whatever. You're like, you know, you have to have that conversation sometimes. But putting the boundaries, putting it into a, I got 20 minutes to talk here, you know, let's have a conversation, I think is a good direction to go there.
It's so nice when you want to talk to someone and you have a lot to talk about and they say to you, I've got 5 minutes, and it puts you in the driver's seat where you're empowered to decide what's most important to get versus, oh, it's so nice to hear from you, I want to catch up on everything you have going on, which is a welcome invitation to share. And I think people like me, we're just going to say what we have to say. I don't worry about it too much. And then I assume everyone's like me, and many of them are not. They're very worried. I don't want to waste David's time. I know it's valuable. It's actually a sign of respect to me that they're not opening up and telling me things. And I'm on my side thinking, why aren't you just telling me what you got going on? Right. But if I take the responsibility on myself to say, hey, I've got 10 minutes, what's the most important thing we can solve in that? It's a very empowering thing to give to the other person. And if we hadn't had this conversation, I probably would not have thought about that.
That's really good. All right, shifting gears a little bit. This may be related to the book, it may be completely different. But if you were suddenly put in charge of the American school system, let's say you're the secretary of schools or whatever they're called, what should be taught? What class would you institute would be taught in every single school? Or whether it's a full class or whether it's just a mini one, what would you say, like, this is important, it's not taught in schools, it should be?
I think emotional intelligence, it's something that we pick up on, we're intuitively good at a young age, but I think we're also taught over the course of our lives to not show as much, you know, put on your poker face, or if you're down, just like suck it up and keep going on. And those cues get harder and harder to read in other people. And I think they're undervalued, because I think when you are able to tune into what's happening for other people, it just opens so many things up, and it makes your role in, you know, a relationship much clearer also. So I think we all have it. It just kind of just gets set aside, and we don't really nurture it in a way that I think we could.
Yeah, that's so good. And it is related to it, but it's bigger than just the listening thing. It's everything. Just having that emotional intelligence, be able to know, like, where am I in this situation? Where are they in this situation? Am I reading the situation correctly? I don't think it's natural for everybody today, like, to just do that. Like, there's so many people that are just struggle with that. So that's a good answer. Good answer. Next one I got for you. Where are we going to go? Hold on. This happened to David earlier.
This is the danger of trying to listen better, as you forget what you were going to say. Our memory muscle is weak because we're bad listeners, so it forgot it in like the 3 seconds it took.
But you, what's funny about that is that we actually tend to remember the things that are really important. So we spend a lot of time like trying to hold on to something in conversation. But most times when you let it go, if it's really important, it'll come back, particularly if there's some sort of emotional connection to it. But we tend to, we don't have faith in our memories in that way.
Yeah.
But the really important stuff does tend to come back. We just often get kind of mired down in the details.
I want to shift gears away from necessarily the topic at hand, which we're talking about listening, because obviously the it's super important topic that is going to benefit all the people listening to this show. But as the show is about all areas of success and about just growth in general, I want to hit a few other areas that you've been successful in. One of them is, you know, obviously landing a book deal and writing a book. So the art of like actually getting becoming a published author, and then the whole practice of writing a book. I'm wondering what did you learn through that process? Like what surprised you? What was easy? What was difficult? Let's talk about that for a little bit.
You know, before I wrote the book, I had done a bunch of writing, but short form, so articles and that kind of thing. And I really had no idea, you know, how hard it would be to write a book. I didn't know what to expect. I sort of thought, okay, you know, it's going to be the length of however many articles, right? And it's not like that at all. That's not a comparable set of tasks. And so I think I learned along the way a lot just about how to tell a larger story and how do you piece all these little bits together and have kind of a through line that connects them all. And I'm grateful for having good editors to help me figure that out. But I think the other thing that I learned was more about myself by the end of it, where I think as I was writing the book, I always had the reader in mind of like, what will be helpful to them? How can they apply this in their everyday lives? And then by the time I finished the book, I realized that this was a book that only I could have written and that it was actually deeply personal. You know, it's not, I'm not sharing necessarily my entire life story in the book, but I'm very much a part of the book. You know, my training, my background makes its way in. I also have some illustrations in the book. The sensibility, the things that I care about, I think come across pretty clearly and are very, you know, very much tied to who I am as a person and what I value. And that was kind of a pleasant surprise. It also, I think most writers probably would agree, it definitely creates a sense of vulnerability because you're like, well, that's me in that book, you know. So we're just going to put it out there. But I think that has been, just a nice, I've had kind of a nice learning experience in terms of some of the technical aspects of, you know, taking on this kind of project and also just some sort of personal reflections too of what this has meant for me as an individual.
What did your writing process look like? I know every writer is a little bit different. Were you like, I'm going to write this many words every day, or was it, I feel inspired today, I'm going to write, you know, for 6 hours straight? What did that look like?
Yeah. So I had a full-time job at the same time. So I didn't really have the luxury of saying, I'm just going to sit in front of my computer and write for a full day. So it was more making good use of weekends. I also, you know, there were certain things about myself, like I'm a morning person. I don't have great ideas later in the day. So I would do my writing in the morning and then illustrating or researching in the evenings on the weekends. And then I'd try and get a couple hours in, you know, weeknights. But for me, what was most motivating, and this is going to be really nerdy, but I had a big spreadsheet that had like line items. And every time I wrote, I would keep track of like, okay, how many hours did I do spending time on writing or illustrating or researching? That for me is personally motivating because when you are working something on something that you're starting from a blank page and then eventually you're going to have something, but it's kind of a 2-year process to have that something. I needed a way of measuring my progress along the way. And so that very unsexy spreadsheet was my way of seeing, okay, I'm making progress. Like I sat down this weekend, I got a draft of this chapter through, I can keep going from there. Yeah. So I'm definitely not a writer who, you know, just follows their inspiration. I'm more of the disciplined, like, okay, we've only got 2 hours today. Let's make them count. And you know, do it again tomorrow.
Like, I got two things to pull out of that I think is fascinating. Number one, your idea of managing energy, knowing who you are, that self-awareness of knowing who you are and what type of energy is stronger at what part of the day, I think is so important for every entrepreneur, every creative person, every artist, writer, no matter what it is, real estate investor. Because like, I just know that I'm not good at certain things early in the day, but I am better at them later. And so you recognize it in yourself and you went and accomplished that, which I think is super good. So like for me, for example, I just know that if it gets after about 2 o'clock, I'm not analyzing that deal. I'm not doing that meeting. I'm not going to call that person. I just don't do it in the afternoon. But I'm really good in the afternoon at making video content. I love getting in front of a camera at 4 p.m. So I recognize that and I lean into that. So I guess first tip for people just pulling out from your example there is take an inventory of your life and figure out where you're better at certain things and not at others. I hate working out early in the morning. I don't want to do it. I just can't get up at 6 and go run. I've tried many, many, many times. I'm just not that guy. But I can get up and read for 2 hours in the morning and I'm just on fire. That's when I'm at that moment. So managing your energy at different times of the day, I think is super vital. And then second part there is tracking your progress on a long goal. You see, like writing a book is very much like buying a rental property or flipping a house. Like the work you do today, you're not getting paid next Friday for it. Like that's the mindset we all got into when we're at jobs, right? We get a job, we work, 2 weeks later, we get paid for it. If we don't work, we don't get paid for it. So that immediate feedback is very vital in most careers. We don't get that when you're doing a long-term investment like a book or a property. And so your advice there of like tracking your progress. Today I did this. Here's the action step that I took today. And if you went a week and you couldn't look back and say over the past week, these are my action steps, you're not going to get the results that you want down the road. So when I wrote a book, whenever I write a book, I always track my word count every single day. It doesn't even matter necessarily how many words I got, though I do set a goal. But just by knowing that I'm taking progress every day, make sure that I'm actually getting closer. So that would be the advice I have for people listening is like, if you're trying to build a real estate empire or you're trying to write a book, you're trying to do anything, to do exactly what Ximena just said there, write down your progress, record that in a spreadsheet, get nerdy every single day. And if you did that, you're going to see the results that you want long term. So anyway, just wanted to pull those things out. That's awesome.
As Brandon mentions that, I started thinking about that's really a struggle I'm having in my life right now. At one point, I was sort of addicted to working because as a police officer, if I clocked 3 hours of overtime, that equaled, 5 hours of pay. And there was a very direct correlation between punching the time clock and getting a paycheck. And dopamine was present every minute I was at work. I got a reward. And then I moved into real estate sales and it was hard because there's not a direct correlation between time spent and money that's made. There's a bit of faith where if I take these actions, I can make this money, but you don't, in the beginning, you're not good at it. And those actions don't result in money. You fumble a couple deals and then I got good. But what happened is I made the connection again between if I go on a listing presentation, I'm going to get a paycheck. And so the dopamine switched to that activity. And now I've grown into where I'm leading a team. And I've taken another step back away from my actions directly creating revenue, and I'm pouring into people. And I have to have a measure of faith that if I do that, that will eventually result in money coming in. But it's like I'm a step removed from the actual direct influence of the whole thing. And so I'm not getting that dopamine hit. And what, as you guys were talking, what I started to realize is you sort of have to, as you grow, like let's say you're learning how to analyze deals, you don't get paid for that. You have to have faith that this is going to become something that will work for me. And I have to have faith that if I continue to hire people and pour into them and go through the process with that person, that will result in something bigger than what I have now. But it's very hard to get comfortable operating out of that faith when you're used to that direct feedback that you just described.
Yeah, and I think part of that is also being strategic about where are you leaning in and where can you afford to lean out? It's sort of the quantity versus quality. It's not just tracking, all the things that you're doing or could be doing, but it's being strategic about, okay, now that you're leading a team, what are the things that you don't have to be involved with that they'll actually do a great job of moving that forward? And then what are the things that, that's where your particular expertise comes into play. And that's really where you want to lean in. When I was kind of working on my spreadsheet, I could see if I was spending way too much time on illustrating and not enough on moving the chapters forward, or I could see, oh my gosh, you're really overworking an idea because you haven't, you know, switched to a new tab and taken on this other task. So I think part of it is tracking that progress, but also taking that higher level look, which is what you're saying of, hey, where can I spend my time most effectively? And how do I prioritizing those from there?
And sometimes it doesn't feel as good as when you could just get the safety of that $15 an hour. So I really like that. Side note, I'm just curious, Ximena, when you're releasing a book, do you get that cold pit of fear in your stomach that nobody's going to like it?
Oh my gosh, absolutely. You spend all this time working on it. Same. And same. I think in some ways I had a little bit of, I had this like great delusion while I was writing it, which was I wasn't thinking about that. You know, I was like, I definitely had moments of doubt while I was working on it for sure. But then ultimately felt like, yeah, okay, I'm good. Like, wrote the book. We're good with this. And now as we get closer and closer to people are going to read it, people are going to have opinions. It's sort of like dawning on me, oh my gosh, people are going to have opinions. It's not just my opinion anymore.
And that's why that those reviews mean so much to us when people say nice stuff.
I feel that every time. I've written, what, four or five now? Yeah, every time I'm like, I don't know how. And in fact, actually, the thing that makes me feel the best about it is not actually the reviews, but when I actually hold the physical book in my hand, I feel a whole lot better because I'm like, okay, it all came to. But when I'm reading the guy, like the edits ahead of time and I'm doing all that, like the digital stuff, it feels like the worst book ever. I'm just like, this is terrible. No one's going to like this. And then I hold the book. I'm like, all right, this is a real book. Like this worked out. I can hit it on the table and it makes a thing. So yeah. yeah. Funny. Anyway,
not for me. I need the good reviews. I worry, like, I still wrote a crappy book and now it's real crap. It's actually realistic. So if you're listening to this and you like Ximena's book, please go leave her a positive review. It means the world to those of us who are worried and don't want to admit it.
Yeah, it does mean a big difference, especially on Amazon. If you get positive reviews, it makes a big difference for authors. So if you want to help support authors, go leave a review. It helps. All right. Speaking of the book, let's just talk about that for a minute. What's it called? Where do people get it?
Yeah, it's called Listen Like You Mean It, Reclaiming the Lost Art of True Connection. And you can get it anywhere. Books are sold, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, your local indie. And they're all linked from my website, which is my first name, lastname.com/listenlikeyoumeanit.
Again, I would encourage everyone to pick up a copy of this book because it's one of those things like we try to do here on the weekend episode of the Bigger Pockets podcast is pull out topics whether it's authors, speakers, like, you know, successful CEOs, whatever that we believe is going to benefit you in your entrepreneurial journey as a real estate investor, as a business owner, whatever you're trying to do. We believe these things, especially listening like you mean it, like, we believe that's going to benefit every area of your life. It's going to make you a more well-rounded person and, successful. So check it out. Pick it up, of course. And we're not quite done, though. We have one more segment of the show. Let's move over to the last part of our show. It's called the
Famous Four.
This is the part of the show where we ask the same four questions every week to every guest. So we're going to throw them at you right now. The first question is special just for the weekend episode of the podcast, unlike the real estate episode, which airs on Thursday. The question is there a habit or trait that you are currently working on or trying to improve or develop in your own life? Anything you're working on right now?
I would say it's probably one familiar to most people, which is just using my phone less. And specifically, I think what I've realized is just the sort of instinctive pickup. You're not actually doing anything, but you just keep picking it up. That's the part that I really want to cut down on.
That's like the equivalent of walking into the kitchen and opening the fridge and you have no idea why you did it, but you just keep doing it.
Before we move on, there's an app called Moment. I'm just going to toss out there. I have no connection to them other than I use it. It's called Moment on your phone. And it just shows you how many times, like how much screen time you have, which is normal. The iPhone can do that as well. But it also talks about how many pickups you have and you can like set some goals and start an actual phone fast. And there's some cool things there. So definitely check that out.
Next question, what is your favorite business book?
Ooh, my favorite business book. I really remember liking Rework by Jason Fried, which I read several years ago.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, just about, you know, the nature of work and approaching teams and norms and things like that.
Yeah, that was one of my favorites as well. It's been a few years since I read that. I need to pick that back up again.
Every book is one of his favorites.
There are a
Brandon
lot of them.
Has a relationship to books, much like those people that go to like the dog pound and every dog there, they just want to adopt them all and love them.
That's funny. Yeah.
That's how he's at the library. Oh, look at that little one with the dog-eared pages. It just needs a little love. I could save it. All right. What about some of your hobbies?
I mean, a lot of writing, illustrating, and then just walking. I'm finding that in the pandemic, the simpler, the better. And so I've been enjoying just, you know, taking a hike, stretching my legs. I definitely get the sort of like, if I don't move enough during the day, my body will let me know. So I found that to be helpful and also meditative. You know, it helps with the whole phone thing for sure.
All right. Last question for me. What do you think, if you had to boil it down, what do you think separates successful, and we'll say entrepreneurs or business owners, or just anybody trying to improve their life? What separates them from those who give up, fail, or never get started?
I think a mix of self-awareness and persistence. You have to know enough about yourself to know how to make that goal workable for you. And then you got to be willing to keep going when things get tough.
I really like that answer. You know, I've heard people say persistence before, and I think it's the right answer, but it's not persistence like no matter what. It's combined with self-awareness is the key there. I think those two things together, like that could be a book right there, like how to combine those. It's like rocket fuel or something. Like you combine those two things together and you can accomplish anything, but one without the other and you're not going to make it. So that's a great answer.
Yeah. I made a video in the Seashed the last time I was in Hawaii that talked about when to quit and when to keep going and how to actually make an objective decision about when persistence is needed versus when you're just banging on a door. Brandon, you got something to say?
You just missed an opportunity to rhyme when to grit and when to quit.
Oh, well, that's because I don't have your marketing mind.
I stole that from somebody. But
when to persist and when to quit. Yeah, grit and quit.
When to grit and when to quit. I don't know who said that, but it was good. Anyway, David, get us out of here. You got the final question.
All right. Ximena, tell us again about the book and tell us where people can find out more about you.
Yeah, so the book is called Listen Like You Mean It, and you can learn more about me and about the book on my website, which is ximenavinguchea.com. I'm on Twitter, if that's your space of choice. I'm on Instagram, too. I think I have pretty good SEO, so you'll be able to find me.
We'll link to all that in the show notes at biggerpockets.com/show459, I think that is. Yeah, biggerpockets.com/show459. So you can go there and click the links and we'll go to social media and all that stuff for Ximena. So check it out. Ximena, before David takes us out, I just wanted to say thank you very much for being on here. It was fantastic. You are a great listener and a great talker. So good job.
Thanks, Brandon. This is David Green for Brandon, Dr. Seuss Turner, signing off.
You're listening to Bigger Pockets Radio, simplifying real estate for investors large and small. If you're here looking to learn about real estate investing without all the hype, you're in the right place. Stay tuned and be sure to join the millions of others who have benefited from BiggerPockets.com, your home for real estate investing online.
The market is changing and finding your way can be tricky. Rates shift, headlines whirl, but your goal hasn't changed. You want financial freedom. And the best investors know it's not about timing the market, it's about time in the market. If you're ready to get into the real estate investing game or take your game to the next level, finding an investor-friendly agent is your next step. With BiggerPockets Agent Finder, you can find the right agent in minutes. Just head to biggerpockets.com/deals and enter a few details about what and where you want to buy, and bam! Instantly match with an investor-friendly agent who fits the bill. These local market experts can help you navigate the neighborhoods, analyze the numbers, and take action with confidence once and for all. This free resource is only available at biggerpockets.com/deals. Get an agent, get the deal, and get closer to financial freedom at biggerpockets.com/deals. That's biggerpockets.com/deals to find your investor-friendly agent today.
The content of this podcast is for informational purposes only. Past performance is not indicative of future results, and all hosts and participant opinions are their own.
Investment in any asset, real estate included, involves risk. Use your best judgment and consult with qualified advisors before investing. Only risk capital you can afford to lose.
Bigger Pockets LLC disclaims all liability for direct, indirect, consequential, or other damages arising from reliance upon information presented in this podcast.